Hello and welcome to Leadership Perspective, the official podcast of the Nordic Resistance Movement. This is our third episode. My name is Fredrik Weidland, and with me I have the leader of the Nordic Resistance Movement, Simon Lindberg. Greetings.
Hello, hello.
How are you doing?
I'm just fine, thanks. Looking forward to record this third episode.
Yeah, me too. So, yeah, let's get started.
Yes.
So, last weekend we arranged our first Resistance Days in Sweden, which is an internal event for our activists. And for those who do not know, activists are members in the organization that we demand more of than ordinary members. So when you see people on the streets, leading the marches, holding the flags, these are usually activists or to be activists. They are the backbone of our organization. In previous years, we have had activist days, and the difference between that and resistance days is that resistance days are even more practical and physical. Physical training on specific scenarios that could be reality on the streets, lectures on how to behave on the streets, spectacular activism, and other more internal things. I would also want to say that the actual translation of this event, Kampdagarna, would be something like struggle days. Think about the Kampf in German. But when we published our article, we chose Resistance Day because Struggle Day sounds quite corny, actually. So the article could be read on NordicResistanceMovement.org. Do you have any input on Resistance Days?
I have some, but I think I will save it for the next segment, actually. So I will talk a little bit more about it there to get some other things.
Ah, okay. So it's like a cliffhanger.
Yeah, you could say so.
Yeah, but another thing we do on Resistance Day is that we deliver news, both internal, exclusively for the activists, and also for the public. Something that we announced for the public was where we will hold our yearly First May demonstration, and it will be in Uppsala, just north of Stockholm. Uppsala is the fourth largest city in Sweden. It is a city known for students, and it used to be a stronghold for the Reds. Perhaps it still is. So we expect that the Reds will try to gather people from around Europe, like in Kungälv last year. And that went all fine. And it went fine, even though we had to split up our numbers in two cities last year. This year, we will have only one big demonstration instead of two minors. And every time we had a big demonstration, we have had numbers between 600 and 800, I think. So it will be a big demonstration this year also.
Every time in modern time, you can say, because of course in the past when we were a younger and newer movement, we didn't gather that many people, but the last years at least.
Since 2016, I think. Mm. Yeah. And the reason I talk about the 1st of May is that I hope that you also will be one of us marching within our ranks on that event. Last year we had some Italians, French, Germans, Ukraine, was it? Think?
Yes, there were a couple from Ukraine at least.
Yeah, they marched with us. So foreigners coming to us is not that uncommon. And I could almost guarantee, I mean, if you're not 600 to 800 additional people, I could guarantee it. But we can arrange places to stay during the weekend. This year, 1st of May happens also on a Friday, so we are planning to have some social gathering afterwards. And for my own part, I hope that my comrades from Patriot Front will arrive. We had a great time in Gothenburg recently. And sure, I know it's a long trip, but if you have the time and money, this is an event you don't want to miss. I can guarantee for all of you listeners that there will be some action and also some fun. What do you think?
Yes, absolutely. I think it will be a really, really great day. And as you say, as it is in a Friday, it should be easier for foreign comrades to come and join us, since they can spend a weekend in Sweden as well. And another thing actually is that Uppsala is really close to Sweden's biggest airport, Arlanda. It's only about 30 kilometers, I think, from Arlanda. So it's it will be very, very easy to get there to Uppsala. And just as you said, we can probably arrange some sleeping places. Worst case scenario, we at least can help out with booking some good place to stay, some good accommodation. So we will do whatever we can to make sure that you feel welcomed and that you get value for your time and money that you spend on us. We are very happy to see your support among us on the streets when we proclaim that we are the true workers' party and the future for the Nordic people.
Yeah. Yeah. We go into the next segment. What has happened in the struggle since last time? This episode is recording in February the 11th. So what has happened so far in 2020?
Yeah, so far this year we have carried out somewhere between 250 to 300 activities in the Nordic countries. We have spreading flyers, putting up stickers, arranging lectures and social gatherings. We have had some wilderness activities, both smaller and bigger, a lot of martial art trainings and much more. We also, as usual, have been in several different towns for public leafleting in the city centers and squares. And among these public activities that we have done so far this year, I would say that two stands out. One square meeting with a speech that we had in Nyköping, and also a special public leafleting in the city of Leksand, where the public was informed and warned about a Somali pedophile rapist. And we are very good at these public activities, and therefore they have become really common. It's very, very, we have them, a lot of these activities. And this means that to really stand out, it needs to differ a bit from the others. And I would say that with a powerful megaphone speech, you definitely gain the attention from more citizens. And therefore, that can be said to stand out a bit more. And the same can be said when you have produced a special local flyer about something that recently have happened in a smaller city, like we did in Leksand. And things like this is something that we actively are trying to work on even more this year, to conduct more quality activities that stands out more. And yeah, maybe you would like to add something on that. I know you gave a speech on this topic, actually, on the resistance days.
Yes, I actually did. And we spoke about it afterwards with the activists also. So, but yeah, more activism where we engage in hot topics, something that has happened, like the pedophile in the Leksand. We have a specific leaflet to hand out about this situation, and
to engage people more in the small towns and to stand out more, as I said, to be a talk of the town, more than if we just stand up as usual with some mainstream leaflets.
Yeah.
And the same thing goes, for example, as I said, with this square meeting where there also were held a speech. That is also something that probably, as I said, it gained more attention from citizens, but also it gets more, there is more to talk about afterwards. People will be more affected by that activity than just a common public activity.
Yeah, and we spoke about more queer meetings instead of ordinary leafleting. And I think the election campaign really was good for us because we trained a lot of speakers, a lot of agitators. And of course, this person, Jimmy Thunlin, who spoke in Nyköping, he's a veteran speaker. But we have also other speakers coming that we trained on the election campaign. So the future look quite good in that matter.
Yeah. And we will, of course, continue our ordinary public activities as well. And we do not say that ordinary public activities where we stand with a flag in a city center and handing out leaflets are bad or ineffective in any way. We are just been so good at that. So we have done it for a long time and we have conducted really many of these public leafletings. So we are trying to make it even better, to sharpen ourselves even more, to get even more value for the time we spend on the streets, you could say. So if you are part of a newer movement or something, it's not a complaint if you do public activity. It's amazing if you do public activities all around the world. But this is just a way for us to become even better and even more efficient.
Yeah, another step in the in the development. Yeah. So what has happened more?
Yeah, I can add to this topic of public activities that also our good friends in Finland, the Kotivapauta movement, I think it's worthy of mention since it is in the north anyway. And they have had some really nice activities already during the years. But one of these activities was in a public leafleting in the city center of Tampere, where they burned an Israeli flag in the public. And the reason why I mention this is because this flag burning has caused a media storm in Finland. And now the police actually investigate if this is a hate crime. They would like to put people in prison for burning an Israeli flag. And this is true evidence, as well as many others, about how freedom of speech is going really fast downhill also in Finland and in Nordic countries. Because, of course, if some anarchists had burned the Finnish flag or something, I can guarantee you that the police wouldn't care at all. So it's just an evidence of how things look when it comes to freedom of speech in the Nordic countries.
Yeah, 10 years ago, it was only Sweden that was insane in this matter, really repressive state. But since we and our friends have been developing the struggle in the other Nordic countries, they have also facing oppression from the system.
Mm. Yeah, it goes hand in hand. As the more active you are, the more repression you get. So,
yeah, so it's mainly our fault.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And on the same topic, actually, against Israel, I can also mention that we have made two bigger pan-Nordic propaganda campaigns where we have been active in several towns all over the Nordic countries at the same time. And one of these campaigns, they were against Donald Trump's warmongering with Iran, where posters and banners were put up with the message, "Stop globalism, no more wars for Israel." And the other pan-Nordic campaign we have had was to inform people about the truth regarding the Holocaust. And this was conducted on the Holocaust Remembrance Day. And this, the last one here, is actually a yearly tradition from us, you can say, where we publish a lot of articles on the topic on our websites and then widely spreads propaganda about it to make as many people as possible to go into our sites and read these articles and educate themselves. Because when people understands that the Holocaust is a lie, their whole world usually turns upside down. It's a real eye-opener for many people that gets them, when they realize this, they realize a lot of other truths, and that there is a lot of lies being spread about a lot of other things like National Socialism and so on. So therefore, we usually do propaganda campaigns around this. And so we did also this year in several Nordic countries.
Yeah, I know this for a fact myself, because in my teens, I was, you could say cultural nationalist or something. I didn't understand the race question. But when I understood the Jewish question and the Holocaust being a lie, then I understand the race question as well, because it was a real eye opener.
Yeah,
you regarded the world in another way.
Mm. Yeah, and you are not alone. Of course, we have several examples of people who have actually been waking up by realizing the Holocaust is a lie. So, it's not a main question of ours, I would not say, because at the same time, you can say that, I mean, the Holocaust, even if it would have been true, it was in another country and it was almost 100 years ago now, and we have nothing to do with that. But just on this Holocaust Remembrance Day, when the system tries to push out propaganda about the Holocaust and about evil Nazis and so on, then we take the opportunity to spread the truth, you could say.
Yeah.
And then there has also been a quite big propaganda campaign in Sweden, at least, where we have been aiming propaganda towards youth at different high schools when the schools started after winter holidays. So many pupils, they came to school seeing posters and stickers and so on from the Nordic Resistance Movement. And this is also something we do quite often, but now we have a little bit bigger campaign with the school start. Yeah. And then I mentioned there was a media storm in Finland about this Israeli flag, but there also has actually been another media storm in Finland that is also very interesting. And that is that there, a couple of weeks ago, there was a lot of banners in several Finnish towns putting up from the illegal Finnish branch of the Nordic Resistance Movement. So there was, like, in a week or a couple of days or so, there was banners all over Finland with two runes and making commercial for the illegal branch of the Nordic Resistance Movement. And this was, of course, shocking for the system. They couldn't understand how people could be not become silenced when they forbid them.
No. So that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. But the biggest single activity so far during the year otherwise has been, I would say, the Resistance Days that you talked about in the introduction. And the team we had for this stuffed weekend, I must say, was Struggle on the Streets. So there were several practical and theoretical educations, I would say, on this topic to make us an even more efficient street struggling organization. And among the things we had this weekend, we trained how to defend ourselves against attacks on our demonstrations. We held education in healthcare and first aid with focus on injuries that could appear from street violence if someone attacks us. We talked about optics, how everyone should work together so that we make as good appearance as possible when we conduct public activities and so on. We had juridical information regarding laws that can be used against our street activists and so on. So it was a really good, really educational, and as I said, really stuffed weekend. And I truly believe that this weekend alone sharpened us and will help out making us even more successful in conquering the Nordic streets in the future. So, that's about that, I think. That is the most important things that have happened so far this year.
Yeah. So even though we had a big internal event, we also had a lot of public activism and a lot of headlines as usual.
Absolutely.
In both Sweden, but mostly Finland.
Yeah. There, of
course, or our friends.
Exactly. but of course, there's also been headlines in Denmark and in Sweden and in Norway, actually, also. There is, as you say, it's very common that the Jewish papers throws shit at us. But we see it as compliments. We know that we are on the right path when they lie about us. So it's only good.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going into the ideological and tactical question, and this time it will be about race. In the last episode where we discussed what National Socialism is, you said that the basis of National Socialism is race, that National Socialism is the best for the survival, freedom, and development of our race, and that all the positions of the Nordic resistance movement are thus based on this perspective. We therefore naturally now choose to go deeper into what this race is and why it is so important. We start basic. What is a race?
Yeah, a race could be said to be a biological unit that could be used to categorize a specific subspecies that shares DNA enough to be clearly separated by other subspecies, but not enough to be a completely different species. The different DNA between the different races and the shared DNA within the same race gives us different or shared appearance, both on the outside, how we look, and on the inside, how we act and what our characteristics are. It also gives us certain special abilities and strengths. And if we, for example, look into the animal kingdom, a dog and a cat, they are different species because their DNA differs enough for them to be different species. But then within the species dog, there are several different races that differs from each other enough to be a different race, but not enough to be a completely new species. So poodles, pit bulls, and bassets, they are different races within the species dog. And these races, they have different looks, different tempers, different abilities, and different strengths and weaknesses, and so on. And these different races can also be sorted into different sub-races, to be even more specific. When it comes to humans, then humans are a species, while Negroes, whites, and Mongolians are the three different original races of the human species. And then during history, there has also been a lot of mixing between these three original races that I would say have led to the creation of new groups of people that I state is new races. And we can today see, for example, Arabs, Jews, and Latinos being such races. And within each one of these races, there are different sub-races as well. In the white race, for example, we can find the Nordic race, the Celts, the Southern Europeans, the Slavics, and so on. So to summarize the question, the answer of the question, a race is a biological unit to categorize a specific subspecies that shares enough DNA to be clearly separated by other subspecies, but not enough to be a completely different species. And within your race, you share looks and traits when you compare to other races.
Yeah, so you spoke about the Nordic race. Will the resistance movement try to recreate a genuinely Nordic blonde and blue-eyed race?
No, this is not aligned with our goals. Our goals is that the survival of the public body and the gene pool of the Nordic people must be secured. So the goal is more to preserve the Nordic people as they are today, where the original Nordic race has been mixed with other white sub-races during history, but where the Nordic racial type is still the dominating element in the Nordic gene pool. So Therefore, we want to keep the Nordic countries ethnically Northern European or close to that, rather than going back in time and make them pure Nordic again. We want to keep the Nordic race as it is today.
Yeah, okay. So in the Nordic Resistance Movement's political program, Our Path, we can read that the repatriation of the majority of all those who are not Northern European or of a closely related descent is to begin as soon as possible. Is this the race the Nordic Resistance Movement wants to protect? And what does Northern European or of closely related descent mean more precisely?
First of all, yes, this can be said to be the race that we refer to as our race and the race that we want to protect. And to answer the question what that race is, actually, we believe that most people do understand what we talk about when we refer to the white Northern European race without the need for specifying it more. Most of you know if you are part of this race or not. But except for Northern Europeans, like the Nordic race, the Celtic race, the German race, we talk also about a large portion of the Central and Eastern European ethnicities and parts of the Southern European ethnicities and people with a Northern European ethnic ancestry currently residing in other parts of the world, like in America and Australia and so on. And yeah, that's the category of people that we resemblance is this Northern European race or closely related.
Mm-hmm. Parts of the Southern Europeans, you say, what goes for Greeks and Italians then? For example, you also mentioned a large portion of the Eastern Europeans. Does this include Russians or Poles?
Yeah, first of all, it is important to say that what country you are born in cannot define your race to 100%. There are white Northern Europeans born in almost all countries in the world today, just as there is Africans and Arabs being born in most Western countries. And your race, of course, do not change because of what country you're born in. So you cannot say that you are not part of our race just because you are born somewhere in Africa, as you could not say that you are part of our race just because you are born in Sweden or Norway or Germany or something. And with this being said, when talking about Italians, Greeks, Russians, Poles, or the citizens of any country, we must make sweeping statements. We cannot answer for every single individual. And there are definitely people that could be seen as white Northern Europeans among the Greek and Italian populations, especially, I would say, in the northern parts of these countries. However, the majority of the people living in these countries is of a different white sub-race that differs too much from the Nordic race to include them in our visions of what the main people in our Nordic countries should be. Of course, a small number of Southern Greeks and Southern Italians would not at all harm the survival of our race as a whole. But if we, for example, allowed 10 million a little bit more dark-skinned, black-haired and brown-eyed Southern Europeans to move to the Nordic countries, it would risk to destroy our unique Nordic traits. And when it comes to Eastern Europeans, Slavics like Russians and Poles, I would say that very many of these could be seen as Northern Europeans or closely related. But as said, I do believe that most people actually knows this by themselves, if they are part of this or not. But I guess I could use a good quote from David Lane about when he answers the question, who is white? Then he says, if someone looks white, acts white, fights white, then until their actions prove otherwise, they are our folk. And I would say that the same quote could be used to define who is Northern European or not as well. But since Leadership Perspective is a podcast that is reaching out to the international audience, I would like to add some things on this topic, though. The Nordic countries, they have been inhabited by Nordic people for thousands of years. And not so long ago, actually, the Nordic countries was extremely ethnically homogeneous, if you compare it, for example, to Russia, that has always contained a lot of different ethnicities. And with this being said, our racial rules must be taken into account for our racial survival up here in the north. But I do not believe that all countries around the world must adopt the same view on race. If we have an example look at America, America has never been truly ethnically homogeneous. And on top of that, white people are almost in minority already in the USA. And because of these facts, in America, I rather would have looked up to the white race as a whole than I would have looked into the sub-race of Northern Europeans. So if the Nordic resistance movement were to organize themselves in Russia or America, we would most certainly have looked at our race in a wider spectra than we do here in the North. I hope I make myself somewhat clear. As said before, we have the white race as one of the head races. And then within the white race, there is several sub-races. And since the Nordic countries have been almost exclusively inhabited by Nordic race for such a long time, we believe it is important to keep this racial setting, or at least somewhat close to it, also in the future. However, in a country where our parts of the white race has been present from the beginning of time, you probably should look into the white race as a whole and not just into these specific sub-races. So Greek and Italian, even if not all Greek and Italian, could be seen as part of the Nordic race and therefore be part of the Nordic countries. They probably could be seen as white and part of the people that you could fight for in America, for example.
Yeah. I would also like to add something, because I think perhaps we have some listeners who don't have a good view on Poles or people like you mentioned or whatever. But I think in general, we don't have the luxury nowadays to be engaged in brothers' wars. And we should also let old historical issues go. They are not important any longer, because now our race is at stake. And that doesn't mean, like you said, we would allow 40 million Poles invade Nordic countries. But the Poles, they are with us, and we will work with them. So. And I think also the success on the Jews in the West depends on their ability to always be unified, even though they also differ from each other. And the only way to combat this is to also be unified. And when our race has been united, we have been unstoppable in the history. So I don't know, perhaps this was off topic, but
I think it was a really good add-on, actually, and a clarification of what I said as well. So no, I think that was good.
Yeah, great. A part of this race that you describe here, does the Nordic resistance movement want to eradicate other races than this?
No, absolutely not. We believe in segregated cooperation with other countries and other races, no matter what that race are or what that country are. We believe that international cooperation is necessary for looking out for the planet as a whole and for humanity as a whole, the human species. And we could, for example, of course, conduct trading with other races that shares our respect for each other's sovereignty. And that is, of course, important, because if another race, another nation wants to eradicate us, we can, of course, not cooperate with them. But as long as we respect each other, I think we can have a lot of sharing to do between the countries, between the races. We could also have at least some cultural exchange. And of course, we can have tourism between the countries of different races. However, we believe that this cooperation could be done without importing millions of people from these other countries and races into our country. We believe in strong ethnostates all around the world that looks out for their different race best interests and together in cooperation for the world and humanity as a whole. It could also be added on this question that we do absolutely not want to kill racial foreigners that lives within the North today, but instead we want them to be returned to their respective countries of origin or neighboring regions in the most humane way possible. So we do not want to eradicate or force ourselves in any way on other races. We look out for our own race best, but we also have respect for other races and do not want to harm them unnecessarily.
Would you by this say that we National Socialists are ethno-pluralists?
I would say that National Socialism have a great amount of respect for biological diversity and that National Socialism is not imperialistic. However, I also would like to say that this is not 100% the same as what most ethno-pluralists today talk about. Because we believe that every race has a responsibility of their own to secure their own racial survival. Every race must have the possibility to control its own fate without interference from others. And if another race couldn't manage to survive by themselves, we do not have a responsibility to help them out. But at the same time, we have enough respect for other races' sovereignty to not invade them or try to force ourselves on them. So everyone to themselves, but with cooperation when it's favorable for all parts.
Yeah, but not sitting around the table, conducting racial treaties and singing Kumbaya. Not in that sense.
No, exactly. I mean, every race has their own responsibility to take care of themselves. And if they fail with that, I would say it is against natural laws to give them some kind of fake breeding or something to just help them out for the sake of it.
Yeah, and also if it is in our best interest regarding our own survival, then we, of course, could invade other countries, stuff like that. But
yeah, you can take not just invasion, not just being that, talking about those aggressive things. But you can say if, for example, another country with another race, they totally destroys the planet by toxic waste and stuff, then of course we need to interfere with them and tell them that this is not good for any one of us, you must stop with this, for example. So there is an example where we need to go into their own faith, where we cannot let them be just and do what they want. But as long as it's not things that compromise our survival, then every race needs to have the ability to form their own destiny and do their own choices of life.
Okay, yeah. So the utopia is to respect others and perhaps cooperate with them also. But the main thing for us is our own survival.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes, there are those who claim that there is only one human race and not several separate ones. What do you have to say about this?
I must say that the ones claiming this, they are brainwashed idiots.
Yeah.
And I will, of course, talk a bit more about it than that, but it could have been an answer good enough. No, but it is usually stated that all humans share 99.7% of their DNA. And this meaning that the DNA difference is not big enough to say that we are different races. However, this is kind of a trick, since this is the results you get when you measure all DNA and not just the relevant parts that differ us. With the same methods of measuring, for example, we share 98% DNA with chimpanzees. We share 90% DNA with cats. And we share 60% DNA with a cucumber and a banana. So this says quite a lot about how much even a small variety in DNA does when measuring all the DNA that you do when you say that 99.7% is the same. There are big differences between the different races, except for the obvious differences we can see in phenotype. There are also differences in strength and intelligence. There are different amount of resistance within us against various diseases and poisons. There are differences in creative power and in national morals and so on. And it is, of course, not by coincidence that it is the white race that has been the most successful in the world when it comes to culture, inventions, and exploring throughout history. And actually, there are different species of animals, not races, but whole different species that has more in common with each other when you look at DNA than the different human races. And to accept this fact, to accept that these different species are different species and not just race or the same race, but at the same time saying that there are no different human races, that is just plain hypocrisy. And if you then look at the relevant DNA, the DNA that makes us different, then you can see a much, much bigger difference between the different races than just these stated 0.03%. And as a good example of this, it could be mentioned, a practical example, that if a white man gets two children with two different women, one of them with these women being white and the other one of these women being black, then the white child has more genetics in common with a totally random other white person than he has with his racially mixed sibling. So that's quite interesting, and says also how big the difference is between the races, that even though you have the same common parent, one of your parents, you still have more in common with a totally random other person of your own race. Yeah. So, with all this being said, there definitely exist different human races. There is no doubt about it. And a man of knowledge that claims something else just plays with words and numbers, turning and manipulating them to fit their own purpose.
Yeah, and I think the inner traits, characteristics are very important, but it's hard to measure that. It's more easy to measure IQ and that stuff, but you should watch. You should view our ability to create culture and civilization. Look at that, and know that there is no coincidence that there are whites building the greatest civilizations. And I think one thing here is, I heard that description, but if a black man, for example, look at a mountain, they think that, no, I don't want to know what's behind the mountain, but it's safer to be here, and here I have my friends and my joyful life. But a white man want to explore what's behind the mountains. So that's an inner trait, I think, has been very important for our development in our own race. We have a lot of explorers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not stating that the one trait is better than the other. It's just that we are different, because there could be good things about being safe and being taken care of your own right where you are. And there could be other things that is good with exploring. So not stating that one of these are better than the other, just it shows a difference, definitely.
Yeah, and that difference has a great impact in the history.
Mm.
Because like the metaphor, the mountain here, it could be taking in new ideas or exploring lands, of course, and a lot of things.
Mm.
That we have when we use this trait to development.
Yes, absolutely.
So looking at all these aspects, well, the ability to build civilizations, IQ, the phenotypes, black men running faster, stuff like that. Why are there those who claim that there is only one race?
Because they're brainwashed idiots.
But
of course it is by the same reason that many people has all their opinions on different topics, because the establishment and the media tells them what to think and believe through repeatedly subversive lies in the papers, movies, and even in the educational material. The globalists running the world today, they want the masses to believe that there is only one race, because then it's easier to motivate why we should import millions of foreigners and why we should mix up with them. Because if we are only the same, everyone, it doesn't matter anyway. And many people, sadly enough, believes in this propaganda. I could answer this question a lot more developed than that, but I think I will stay with that easy answer for now. But however, I would say, even if it doesn't seem like it sometimes, I would say that a great majority of people around the world still knows that there are different races. But since it is politically incorrect to go against the establishment, and it's saying it is not something that most people talk about loud. But I am certain, though, that most white moms and dads in the world, they would prefer if their kids get a white partner in life so that they get white grandchildren. In other words, I am 100% certain that most people still are racially aware, even if that doesn't mirrors what is said in the media and in the educational material, in the movies and so on.
Mm. Yeah. You touched the subject early here, but does the Nordic Resistance Movement rank races? Are there better and worse races, and do we have more worth?
I think it is quite a horrific capitalistic argument that you should put value on a human being just like you value a car or a house or something. But with that being said, of course, everyone is not equal. And everyone is not equally worth, but it is more of a subjective value than a fixed objective one, I would say. Because, of course, your own family is worth more to you than it is worth to other people that doesn't even know your family. And, of course, your own race is worth more to you than other races are to you. We do fight for our own race, and we do believe that our race is the most fantastic race on earth. But at the same time, most Africans or Asians would probably think the same about their race. So we do not look down at any other races, and we do not value other races. We do not rank the different races. But at the same time, we point out that there are differences between the races, and that we fully subjective looks out for and loves our own race the most. For me, my own race is more valuable than others.
Yeah. But to move on, one thing we haven't discussed here is culture. Isn't culture more important than race?
No, because culture is created by race. It is not the other way around, and it could never be. Culture, and therefore also religion, actually, because religion is culture in its highest sense, you could say, it could be said as being a mirror of the racial soul. It is not Islam that has made the Arabs the way they are. It is Arabs that have made Islam the way it is. And if a race gets biologically extinguished, then also the culture belonging to that race will perish. Perhaps some races, and also some mixed races, they can carry and sustain another race cultures, at least for a while, but they could never create another race unique culture. And also perhaps you can somewhat integrate a few racially foreigners. You can learn them to adopt to a certain culture. But in the long run, and if they get too many, they will change the culture into their own culture, the culture that reflects their racial abilities and traits. And this could be seen as a natural law. Without white people, there will be no more white culture. And therefore, culture is and will never be as important as race is. Race is the core to every political and philosophical questions, and compared to race, everything else could be seen as nonsense, actually.
Yeah. So the Nordic Resistance Movement is not a anti-racist counter-jihad movement, then?
No, absolutely not. The problem with importing millions of Arab Muslims is not firstly that they are Muslims, but that they are Arabs. They are racially foreigners. And too many racial foreigners that mix with our own race will extinguish our own race. And I'm not saying that Islam is the perfect religion for white people, just to clarify that. But I am saying that I every day of the week rather would live in a Muslim, ethnically homogeneous white nation than I would like to live in a Christian or atheistic Arab or Somali nation. But of course, that is just a metaphor, because a white nation, they would never adopt Islam as their religion, since it does not mirror their racially abilities.
Yeah. Yeah, so do you have anything to add to the race question, or are we done?
We can just say that race is the core of everything, as I mentioned, and right here, right now, all over the Western civilizations, evil persons ruling the world are trying their best to destroy our race. Our enemies, they definitely knows about race. They definitely acknowledge race. They definitely knows the importance of race. And that is why they're using biological warfare against us with mass immigration of other races. They try to eradicate us from the face of Earth. And if they succeed, then there is no turning back. We could never get our race back again. So it is up to every one of you who listen to this to do all you can to fight for the survival and freedom of our race, and to do it now, because if you just leave the struggle to your kids or your grandchildren or upcoming generations of whites, they will have a much harder time winning than we have right now. We must take the chance as we have it and fight back with all we can.
Yeah. Yeah, then we will end the show for this time. And questions and suggestions on topics for future episodes of Leadership Perspective can be sent to info@nordicresistancemovement.org. We do also appreciate both negative and positive feedback. Please spread this episode on social medias and help the Nordic Resistance Movement in any way you can. You can read more about us on nordicresistancemovement.org. And the next episode will come out on March 11, 2020. See you there. Bye.
Thank you, everyone, for this time. Take care and goodbye.